The opening sequence of the film begins with this exchange as we find ourselves in a graveyard in Switzerland in the company of two fellows digging with shovels.
How much is a dead comedian worth?
Wait a minute, I know this one.
600,000 francs.
Francs. Francs. What is a man worth in lira? In pounds? In German bear bonds? Tell me that when you're done sprinkling the holy water.
The worth of a man? Well, this ain't any old gent, Gancho. This man here is Charlie Chaplin. This fella here is a celebrated performer. Hell, this old boy's known all around the world. And where I come from, that means something.
The opening exchange of the film Charlie Chaplin's Body by Jeff Boehm. Two thieves are digging up the body of the legendary Charlie Chaplin to hold it for ransom. And as we learn more about Jeff Boehm as a writer and creative artist, we find this image tells us a good deal about Boehm's vision of art and life. While Charlie Chaplin in the movie represents a commodity to the thieves, a way to make a proverbial killing in francs, lira, pounds, or whatever currency, for most watching the film, Chaplin represents a whole era, a particular comic vision, a way of making movies and telling stories about the little fella, the tramp, for example. Comedy with slapstick and pathos, as we're told. So to begin his movie with the digging up of Charlie Chaplin in 1978, that represents, in a way, what Boehm is doing in many of his pieces. He's digging up, bringing back a comic vision from an earlier time, hoping to bring it to life again in our day. And that's just what we find in his latest project, Man on a Canvas, his original comedy being presented by Diva Productions at the Old Brick Theater in Scranton, November 10th through the 19th. As it happens, the cast includes Sam Faubel, who is one of the actors we just heard in the clip from Charlie Chaplin's Body. The executive producer for the film was Paige Belitsky, and she is directing Man on a Canvas. Jeff Boehm is a native of Scranton, and we're told he returned to Scranton from the West Coast to direct the film adaptation of Charlie Chaplin's Body. It had been originally his one-act play with that name. Jeff Boehm and actor Sam Faubel stopped in at the WVIA studios to make us laugh and to talk about Man on a Canvas. Jeff Boehm begins by telling us that he loves film, but his heart is really somewhere else.
My heart is writing, and it's funny because I really enjoy being on TV and doing the film reviews for some other stations locally. But I was just talking to Sammy about this. Writing is really what I talk about probably most when we're together, and what I really enjoy. I'm already working on the next two pieces.
We spent probably 20 minutes talking about the next one, which is at least a year away.
A year away, and the process has changed, but I'm enthused by the whole coming about to this stage where it's produced. And this latest production was a piece that I was shopping around Hollywood back when I lived in Southern California. And I was taking a job managing a hotel at night so that I would be free to shop properties around during the day. But my whole career actually just became what it is because I came back to Northeast Pennsylvania. So props to the home incubator, we'll call it.
And the talent level.
What was the spark for this story, Jeff?
The spark, I had just got done writing a piece that was my homage to the two real comedies of the 20s and 30s and 40s, the old shorts. And my next big influence after that was Kaufman and Hart, who did The Man Who Came to Dinner. A tremendous show.
Sure.
Monty Woolley had originated the role, and then I saw Nathan Lane in the same role, and it just reinstated the fact that I love these two playwrights. When they get together, really sparks do fly, and you can't take it with you. They had done, and George Washington slept here, and just for a playwright, it's just magic on stage. And I didn't know if that translated to modern audiences, but I wanted to darn well try. And that's how Man on a Canvas came about. And so, I just concocted the story that begins at the Algonquin Round Table in the 20s, kind of around the time Kaufman and Hart, and Kaufman actually does play a part in the first scene of the play. And then it transports to modern-day Scranton, Pennsylvania. And so there's a wager made back in the 20s based on a washed-up ex-barefisted fighter, and it peters down to modern day. And in the modern day, a sports writer, that's who Sammy plays, Hank Dukenfield, is writing a mammoth biography of this barefisted fighter who You know, he's obviously a huge fan of, but his publisher isn't so sold on it and wants him to see this bet out, which peters down to the modern day. And it's a screwball comedy in the Kaufman and Hart fashion. And I was unsure if it translates to modern audiences, but, you know, the people who have read the modern iteration seem to really enjoy it. And I'm sure that's due to the talent, because I'm always surround myself with talented people.
You know, I think the other thing that's interesting is people used to say, if you could make it in Scranton, you could make it anywhere. And interesting in this particular context is there was a very rich boxing history here as well. So this piece really incorporates those two histories in a way I've never seen or experienced, certainly, that really brings the history of the area to the forefront and give people a little bit of nostalgia, if you will. And the man to my right, I will always do something for if he asks.
Is boxing back? Haven't there been a couple of great big fights recently?
Well, God bless them, they're trying. As an amateur boxing fan, I feel like the heavyweight division is a bit of a mess. But you're right, there have been a number of fights recently, particularly the McGregor-Floyd Mayweather fight recently. And look, it only helps the artistic community that's participating in this production if there's more interest in boxing now, because it does figure prominently into the storytelling. But like Jeff said, it is, at its heart, a comedy.
You've written and you've done comedy before, Jeff. What are the thrills for a writer, but what are the challenges of making something like this work, especially a screwball nature where it's got to be hell's a poppin' sometimes?
Yes. Yeah, so, well, I'm a bit of a perfectionist. I'm sure Sam will laugh, and he knows my process. I go back and I
claim the fifth.
I beat it against the rocks until, you know, every joke is, I think, as funny as it can possibly be. And the worry in this was, does a screwball comedy apply to modern sensibilities? You have very intelligent humor these days. I'm thinking of Judd Apatow's stuff. But it's also very time clockish, as in there's a lot of pop culture references and stuff of that nature, and it tends to date itself out almost while it's unfurling on the screen, I think at least. And not that they don't make dated references in some of the older movies and even in The Man Who Comes to Dinner, etc. But, you know, I think that it does translate pretty well, and it has to be due to a great director, Paige Bulitsky. Just, I can't say enough amazing adjectives about her, and I've worked with her on so many shows. This is my fourth. And having the talent there, Sammy is a natural comedian, but he's done two dramas for me in a row. And by the way, Sammy auditions for everything. So it's not like he's just being handed these roles. He's just
I can't tell you how nice it is to actually do something where people are supposed to laugh.
But, you know, it's funny that the greatest comedians, and I'm sure there's a term for this these days or what have you. You know, there's always a darkness behind the greatest comedians, especially stand-ups. And I think in comedy, you have to kind of have a very dark undercurrent. And this kind of has that. But I think that we merge with the modern world well. But these actors just really nail it on every level.
Well, I would agree with that. The performers that we have, and if I could, James Scott Flannery, Dante Giammarco, Seth Golden, Donya Jackson, Eric Lutz, Michael Matejeski, Peter Miles, Liz Nero, David Spitzer. Like Jeff said, to get that kind of group assembled and have the timing be right. And it is very much a slice of life kind of thing once we get back to Scranton. Once we set up the bet at the Algonquin and we come back to present day, these are situations that any brother and sister, any person with a love interest, any person with a shady cousin is going to understand and relate to.
And, you know, Scranton does have that very rich boxing history. Any blue-collar town where you went out and spent your whole paycheck at the bar is going to be a hard scrapple, hard fight in town. And to this day, you know, we have a very successful track record. I know that Doug Long and Gene Reed promote a number of fights for up-and-comers in the area, so that history is still alive. I trained as a boxer. I was too weak-kneed to ever get in the ring. Of course, again, a visual medium, the moneymaker, the face. No one should hit this. But, you know, it's one of the hardest sports, and one that they really put their bodies and minds on the line. But I think a lot of blue-collar backgrounds can relate to getting called out, having to fight pretty much every day you go out. Sam and I just fought in the parking lot, just for fun. But I think anybody can relate who's from this area. Not that this area is full of fight, but it is full of vim and vigor.
What drew you to the boxing ring?
I just remember as a sport, you know, I enjoyed baseball, football as well. But really, the first time I saw a fight, it was the Hagler and Hearns fight, which we talk about in the play. In 1985, it was just a blood ballet, which at one point makes it very off-putting. But in another realm, very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Why are these two guys beating each other up in the ring? And just as you read more about the history of boxing and look into it, the rules, and nowadays with UFC, it's become a whole other avenue. And I'm still focused on the Queensberry rules and just a straight boxing. And it just drew me as a sport. I was interested in California. I trained with a former pro boxer. Again, never went out for it, but just was intrigued by the sport. And, you know, every day is a fight. I think everybody can relate to the dynamics of boxing in a crazy way. And certainly I hope that it translates in this play.
Well, I think the other thing that really comes through in the central character of Buddy, who plays the boxer in the show, and it's really interesting to see it encapsulated this way, is the role of the everyman in Northeast Pennsylvania. You know, this is someone who grew up with expectations on his shoulders, not knowing who he was, not knowing who he wants to be, being told who he wants to be, trying to find his way. And again, I think that's one of the themes and storylines that people who come to see this, who may not necessarily have an appreciation for theater, will be able to relate to and appreciate.
Tell us about the title, Jeff.
Well, you know, a lot of writers won't interpret their works. I have no problem just saying I'm not that deep and that it's an unfinished life. Buddy's the boxer is not, his future is not yet written. And it's a man on a canvas, a painting canvas. It's an unfinished work. And Sam, in his role as Hank, is there to kind of help write that last chapter, whatever his motivations are, whether they be nefarious, whether they be good meaning, is just up for the audience to interpret. But Hank is a great character. I wrote him nearly 20 years ago, and I absolutely still one of my favorite characters that I wrote. And Sam, by the way, has probably read every version of Man on a Canvas that ever come down the pike over 20 years.
Pretty close. So, Man on a Canvas, there's also, for me, an artistic reference. Buddy's sister in the play, Constance, is an amateur painter. So for me, there's always been that sort of element to it as well. It's Buddy's story, it's Hank's involvement with Buddy, but then there's also the backdrop of the sister painting and things like that. And I think the title is a unifying part of the script.
Now, most definitely. You touched on a great point there. And there's a romance I want to point out, perhaps.
Oh, well, we weren't going to get into that.
Yes,
but okay,
Hank and Constance. You know, Irving Thalberg, you know, when he put that template down for Night of the Opera, also written by George S. Kaufman, you got to hit all those marks. There's no singing in this, like the Marx Brothers. You don't have to sing in
this,
thank God.
We're doing some rewrites.
Not yet. Not yet. I'm thinking about a boxing anthem, but there's comedy, there's some heart, but also romance, and it's not shoehorned in for the sake of it. I think it happens rather organically.
Yes, for those of you keeping score at home, when Jeff said we've been at this for 20 years, this is the first show he's written that I've been able to play opposite a love interest, which
is great. We all need a good comedy these days. If you're looking at everything going on, you always need comedy. But, I hope that this one really resonates with people. We just really want to get people out and fill the seats because theater's alive and well. Theater is not just Broadway. It's here in northeastern Pennsylvania. And this is where Stephen Karam started, who, of course, wrote The Humans. I saw one of the last weekends of that on Broadway, and it was tremendous. And all the accolades that are going to Mr. Karam are very, very well due. But he did start someplace. It's called Scranton.
I think it's easy for people to lose sight of the fact that there is a tremendous, vibrant, active, talented arts community in Northeast Pennsylvania. And certainly, yes, the performance angle, which involves writers and directors and performers and tech people. But beyond that, there are musicians and sculptors and all sorts of things. And when you get a piece like this from someone who's a homegrown talent and it's being originated locally, it just makes you want to do more, do better, to bring this to life for the first time and show everybody just how great it truly is and just how good the stuff we produce here can be.
Actor Sam Falbo and Jeff Baum, writer, reviewer, and filmmaker, speaking with us about the original comedy Man on a Canvas by Jeff Baum. Diva Productions will continue its 2017-2018 season at the Old Brick Theater in Scranton with Man on a Canvas, running Friday, November 10th through Sunday, November 19th. Shows are November 10th, 11th, 17th, and 18th at 8 p.m., and matinees November 12th and 19th at 2. There's free parking available in the lot behind the theater and on the street. That's the Old Brick Theater, 126 West Market Street in Scranton. And the piece is an original work, Man on a Canvas, by Jeff Boehm. November 10th through the 19th, Paige Bilitsky will be directing 10 actors performing 20 roles, among them Dorothy Parker, Alexander Wolcott, Harpo Marx, George S. Kaufman, and more. It's Jeff Boehm and Sam Falbo here with us talking about Man on a Canvas, the original comedy by Jeff Boehm, running November 10th, 11th, 17th, and 18th at 8 o'clock each night at the Old Brick Theater, 126 West Market Street in Scranton, with Sunday matinees November 12th and 19th at 2. For more information, you're able to find Diva Productions online, and that's facebook.com/diva-theater, T-H-E-A-T-E-R.